Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Srila Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Srila Prabhupada. Jaya Vishnupada, Brahmasa Parivajakacharya. Ashtotara Shatashishi Master Ryan Grace Aisi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Vati Shri Krishna Vati Swami Vati Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Vati Swami Vati Namo Namaste. Hare Krishna, everyone. Thank you for this opportunity. It's always a bit unnerving to speak in this August assembly. I really seek your blessings and permission to say something of value here. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udhirayet Nashtaprayesha Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, 1st Chapter, Text 13. Sa esha dosha purusha dvidaste. Grihan pravishto yamapatya matya. Krishna shri Krishna dvimukho gata shris. Tyajashva shaivam kula kaushalaya. Sa esha dosha purusha dvidaste. Grihan pravishto yamapatya matya. Krishna shri Krishna dvimukho gata shris. Tyajashva shaivam kula kaushalaya. Sa esha dosha purusha dvidaste. Grihan pravishto yamapatya matya. Krishna shri Krishna dvimukho gata shris. Tyajashva shaivam kula kaushalaya.
Shaivam kula kaushalaya.
Sa esha dosha
Saisha dosha purusha vidaste. Griham pravishto yam apatya matya. Krishna Shri Krishna Vimukho Gatashis. Yajashva Shaivam Kula Kaushalaya. Saesha Dosha Purusha Vidaste. Grihan Pravishto Yam Apatya Matya. Krishna Shri Krishna Dvimukho Gatashris. Vajasa Shaivam Kula Kaushalaya. Saesha Dosha Purusha Vridaste. Grihan Pravishto Yam Apatya Matya. Krishna Shri Krishna Vimukho Gatashis. Tajashva Shaivam Kula Kaushalaya. Saha, he, Aisha, this, Dosha, offense personified. Purushadvit, envious of Lord Krishna. Aste, exists. Grihan, household. Pravishta, entered. Yam, whom. Apatyamatya, thinking to be your son. Pushnashi, maintaining. Krishna, from Krishna. Vimukha, in opposition. Gatashri, devoid of everything auspicious. Tyaja, give up. Ashu, as soon as possible. Ashaivam, inauspicious. Kula, family. Kaushalya, Kaushalaya, for the sake of. Translation. You are maintaining offense personified, Duryodhan, as your infallible son. But he is envious of Lord Krishna, and because you're thus maintaining a non-devotee of Krishna, you're devoid of all auspicious qualities. Relieve yourself of this ill fortune as soon as possible and do good to the whole family. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Jaya. A good son is called Apatya, one who does not allow his father to fall down. The son can protect the father's soul when the father is dead by offering sacrifices to please the Supreme Lord Vishnu. This system is still prevalent in India. After the death of his father, a son goes to offer sacrifices at the lotus feet of Vishnu at Gaya and thus delivers the father's soul if the father is fallen. But if the son is already an enemy of Vishnu, how in such an inimical mood can he offer sacrifice unto Lord Vishnu's lotus feet? Lord Krishna is directly the personality of Godhead Vishnu, and Duryodhan was inimical to him. He would therefore be unable to protect his father Dhritarashtra after his death. He himself was to fall down because of his faithlessness towards Vishnu. How then could he protect his father? Vidura advised Dhritarashtra to get rid of such an unworthy son as Duryodhan as soon as possible, if he was at all anxious to see to the good of his family. According to the moral instructions of Chanakya Pandit, what is the use of a son who is neither a learned man nor a devotee of the Lord? If a son is not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, he's just like blind eyes, a source of trouble. A physician may sometimes advise the extrication of such useless eyes from their sockets so that one can be relieved of the constant trouble. Duryodhan was exactly like blind, troubling eyes. He would be a source of great trouble to the family of Dhritarashtra, as foreseen by Vidura. Vidura therefore rightly advised his eldest brother to get rid of the source of trouble. Dhritarashtra was wrongly maintaining such offense personified, under the mistaken impression that Duryodhan was a good son, able to liberate his father. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Stute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Mansha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Yam Pravrajantam Anupetam Apeta Krityam Dvaipayano Virahakatara Achuhava Putre titan mayatayo taravo binedus tam sarva bhutam hridayam munimanathosmi. So just read the translation again. You're maintaining offense personified Duryodhan as your infallible son, but he's envious of Lord Krishna. And because you're thus maintaining a non-devotee of Krishna, you're devoid of all auspicious qualities. Relieve yourself of this ill fortune as soon as possible and do good to the whole family. It's a very important chapter, and I think we all know the background or context of this chapter because other speakers have spoken, but just very quickly. Sutta Goswami, previously in the first canto, he had described the dramatic entry of Vidura into the Pandavas' capital in Hastinapur in the 13th chapter. And he had, after that, he had gone on to narrate the incidents leading up to Maharaj Parikshit's and Sukadeva Goswami's meeting. But what was not described over there was, you know, how Vidura actually went, you know, how did he leave for the pilgrimage before that? Because that time Vidura was coming back after being away for like 35 years. So the first canto, end of first canto, Maharaj Parikshit and Sukadeva Goswami meet, and then through the second canto, Sukadeva Goswami is giving his primary instructions about preparing for death, and he also explained the creation and the Lord's descent as various avatars, and the Chaturshloki verses, and how these texts have been expanded into the 10 topics of Bhagavatam. So, from the beginning of Canto 2 to its end, Sukadeva Goswami actually focuses his words on basically the inconceivable transcendental relationship of the Lord with this material world. And Sukadeva Goswami was going to continue describing further. But then we saw at the end of second canto, Shonaka Rishi interrupts and he says, you know, can you describe these topics about Vidura? How he left for pilgrimage and what happened, his conversation with Maitreya and all that. So he's bringing the story back. They want to hear. So then Sutta Goswami, of course, he knows that Maharaj Parikshit had asked similar questions about Maitreya and Vidura. So then he starts narrating what Maharaj Parikshit had asked, what his questions were, and what Sukadeva Goswami's response was. So in the first few verses, we saw how Sutta first repeats Sukadeva's glorification of the palace of Vidura, not palace of Vidura, the palace where Vidura entered, and how Vidura had actually rejected this palace. And he reminds us that how Krishna himself had visited the palace and lived there as if it was his own. So then naturally Maharaj Parikshit's question is, why then did Vidura actually, you know, leave this palace? You know, it gave him so much security for so long, there was position, there was family and friends and so on. So why did he leave? Because, you know, Krishna was personally there. He was living amongst the Pandavas, you know, like his own house. So Maharaj Parikshit wanted to know, you know, what was this? Because surely, if great personalities like Vidura and Maitreya are talking, it's not going to be some ordinary conversation. So he says, Maharaj Parikshit uses some words, and he says that, you know, this conversation, it must not be unimportant or insignificant. It must be highly purposeful. And it was approved by all the learned circles because, you know, it was even praised by Maitreya. And then now we are reading this section where we're discussing the circumstances leading to Vidura's leaving of Hastinapur. And text 6 to 9 already discuss some of the atrocities that Duryodhana and his party had done. And then now text 10 to 13 is basically, what was Vidura's advice to Dhritarashtra? How did he respond? So in this purport, Prabhupada is talking about a good son, bad son, right? A good son is called a patya, one who does not allow his father to fall down. Most of you probably know how Duryodhan took his birth, you know, what kind of son he was, you know, right from his birth. But just very briefly, the background story is that one day Vyasadev arrives hungry and thirsty through Dhritarashtra's palace. And Gandhari attended to him very nicely. And Vyasadeva actually becomes very, very pleased with Gandhari. And he blesses her. You know, you shall have 100 sons as powerful as your husband. And so in course of time, then Gandhari conceives and, you know, she's pregnant for like 2 years and the child is still not born. And then one day, Gandhari gets the news that Queen Kunti delivered Maharaj Yudhishthir. And so, and this boy was described as being just effulgent and beautiful, like the morning sun. So then she gets really frustrated that, you know, why is my gestation going on for so long? And she just like strikes her, you know, womb with her fist. And just very violently she strikes her womb, and then she delivers a hard mass of flesh, you know, just like an iron ball pretty much. And so the nurses inform her that, you know, you had a stillbirth. And so naturally, she's just like really grief-stricken. And she was thinking of Vyasadeva, you know, he gave me a boon that I will have 100 sons. You know, what is this? So as soon as she thinks of Vyasadeva, Vyasadeva appears on the scene. And Vyasadeva says to her, what have you done? And then she explains, well, I got really frustrated and overwhelmed that, you know, Queen Kunti delivered this beautiful boy and I struck my womb. And she's just like crying and she said, like, you know, what is the meaning of your boon? You know, I just delivered this mass of flesh. So then Vyasadev says that my words can never prove to be false. So then he asks all the servants to bring 100 pots filled with ghee. And then he sprinkles some cold water on this lump of flesh, and then somehow this flesh, just by that sprinkling of cool water, starts dividing into 101 pieces. And then he puts each of these pieces into these different pots, and then he says that, you know, just leave it like that for 2 years, you know, don't open it. And so he says that, and then he leaves for his ashram, Vyasadeva. And then after 2 years, they try to open the pots one by one. And from the first pot was born Duryodhan. And as soon as the pot was opened, actually, they start hearing all these bad omens like braying asses and jackals howling and screaming vultures, and there's just like random fires all over the city. So Dhritarashtra, naturally, he becomes really, really frightened, and he summons all the Brahmins and, you know, Vyasadeva and, not Vyasadeva, Bhishma and Vidura, and he asks them, you know, what is going on? What's the meaning of these omens? And so Vidura replies to Dhritarashtra saying that when we see these kind of omens at the birth of a child, it means that this child will be the exterminator of the entire, you know, dynasty. Our, you know, so our prosperity and future really depends on getting rid of this child. You know, just abandon him. Don't hesitate, O king. This child actually must be cast away at once. And Vidura also tries to, you know, kind of console Dhritarashtra a little bit that you'll have 99 other sons, so don't worry, you know, you'll be okay. And that it's said in the scriptures that for the sake of, you know, the family, an individual can be abandoned. And for the sake of the village, a family can be abandoned. And for the sake of a city, a village can be abandoned. And in fact, for the sake of the soul, the whole world can be abandoned. But of course, what happened? Dhritarashtra never accepted Vidura's good counsel. You know, very strong counsel, because why? He was going to become, you know, the king one day, and he would bring so much ruination. And so those days, people could really predict how the child was going to be, you know, based on their chart right from the birth. And some people didn't even need the chart, they could just see everything, you know. So even in the first canto, in the 12th chapter, we hear about how the Brahmanas, when Maharaj Parikshit took his birth, the Brahmanas are describing Maharaj Parikshit's qualities, that he will be as strong as a lion, and he's will be like unsurpassable, like the ocean. He'll spread the name of the family, he'll be forbearing like the earth, and so on. And as all these qualities were being described, then Maharaj Yudhishthir, you know, he was hearing very, very joyfully, very happily he was hearing all these qualities. And then finally, he also, the Brahmanas also describe how this child one day will chastise, you know, Kali. He'll be the chastiser of the upstarts. And then the Brahmins also describe how Maharaj Parikshit will be, you know, struck by this snake bird. He'll be bitten by the snake bird and he'll die, and how he will just give up the kingdom and he'll fix himself completely, fearlessly, and surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when Maharaj Yudhishthir hears this, he doesn't show any like signs of any disturbance or any surprise or, you know, excitement or worry or anything like that. And he never tried to even counteract anything. Because in the Vedic times, you know, birth and death was not given the kind of significance we give nowadays. It was just completely different. What was more important at those times was just how people lived and how they contributed to, you know, others' lives, and how basically one's relationship, their own relationship with God was awakened, and how they were contributing to that awakening of relationship also in the others. Right? We've heard Prabhupada in so many purports, you know, just describing basically the essence of how the only goal of human form of life is to improve the consciousness. Even later in Maharaj Parikshit's life, right, when he actually gave up everything and he didn't counteract the curse, the sages asked the question, how come Maharaj Parikshit is giving up everything? You know, he was actually a shelter for so many people and everything was going so well in the kingdom. So again, the consideration always in these questions was, or the whole value system was, how somebody lived and how they were doing welfare activities, including, you know, one's father and mother. So the greatest, you know, benefit a child can do for the parents is actually to deliver them. And that's the meaning of the word putra, right? Pu means hell, and trayate means to deliver one from. So there's one South Indian saint, I can't remember his name, but I heard one time that he speaks of how he's a glorious sun. So if somebody sees a person in action, you know, one should kind of like see his actions and say, oh, whose son is he? You know, that should be the kind of son. Or similarly, as we know, like Prabhupada would also sometimes speak of how, you know, when a disciple is seen, then our action should make others ask, oh, whose disciple, you know, is he? So anyway, what was, you know, Duryodhana's character here? Prabhupada's purport describes several things. And one of the things he says is that he was an enemy of Vishnu. Because what the son does after the father leaves so that the father doesn't fall down is that he offers pinda. And part of pinda is that he's offering prasad to, or offering bhoga to Vishnu. And but Duryodhana was this enemy of Vishnu. So why should, you know, Vishnu accept anything? Even if, like, let's say he's doing something ritualistically, why would Krishna even accept? Because, you know, Krishna knows the aspirations. I wanted to also share, you know, something further from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He gives some more insights. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as we know, he always has this insight into the internal dialogue that's going on between Krishna or any personality. He has access to all the personalities' heart. It's quite amazing. So when Vidura advised that you know, Dhritarashtra should give up Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra, so Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, oh, but my son Duryodhana will oppose this. So then in answer, Vidura speaks this verse and he's saying, he's fault personified. He has arisen as a result of your sins committed for 10 million times. Wow. He's fault personified because he hates the Supreme Lord, Purushadvit. So when we hate, I mean, there's verses that describe even when we hold something negative towards a saintly soul, all our good qualities disappear. So what to speak of just having this enmity, hating the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you know, he's fault personified. And then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, he's entered, you know, your houses not only externally, but he's entered even your mind and intelligence internally. And you're encouraging him like he's your son, but he's not your son. You know, so basically Vidura is saying in the Mahabharata elsewhere, he says that you think that he's a putra, but actually he's mutra. Mutra. Mutra also comes from the same place, you know, meaning that this is just waste, this is just useless, something to really like get away from. So apatya or son, you know, he does not fall away from us. So you can guess that if, you know, you reject Krishna, then all prosperity will actually go away. So what is the solution, Dhritarashtra asks? So he says, just give up Duryodhana immediately. And then Dhritarashtra says, but, you know, if I reject my son, you know, he will be, there'll be like a black spot in my family. And Vidura says, no, it'll be a benefit to the whole family. Because it's said, again, like we said earlier, that for the sake of family, an individual can be given up, and for the benefit of the society, the family can be given up, and so on. So again, we're seeing just how the whole, you know, value system was so different, and therefore certain words, you know, they can just seem so harsh in the current society. But at that time, the whole value system was so different. And Vidura, he was actually the younger brother of Dhritarashtra. Hare Krishna. younger brother of Dhritarashtra. But Vidura was speaking to Dhritarashtra in such a strong way because Vidura's words were actually considered very, very wise. The very word Vidura actually means very skillful. In a couple of verses before, there was this word Vaidurikam. Vaidurikam means like Vidura's words. It was said that if somebody gave very good advice, you know, they would say, oh, this is Vaidurikam, you're so wise, it's Vidura's words, right? So, So because even though he was a younger brother, because he was the counselor, kind of the advisor, he could speak very strongly, but the unfortunate thing is that Dhritarashtra could never accept. And that's, you know, really one of the themes here, is the difference between a godly person and, you know, a demoniac person, an asura and sura, is because the lack of piety in an asura really makes us, you know, lose all discrimination. But in contrast, like we can see, like in the case of Bali Maharaj, you know, Bali Maharaj surrendered everything, and even then he was bound up by ropes and, you know, and all that. And after that, at the end, you know, Bali Maharaj, he speaks a verse where he says that, you know, although the father, mother, brother, you know, or friend, they may sometimes punish their subordinate, but nobody would punish, you know, the way you punish, my Lord. But he says, but because you are the most worshipable Lord, I actually regard your punishment to be the most exalted. So he's really seeing, you know, he's not understanding fully the reason yet, Bali Maharaj, but he's able to accept that this is, you know, the love of the Lord, just to bring me to the right path. Just bringing to the right path. I just remembered one time I was in Vrindavan, and there was this little baby monkey, and he was trying to get a chapati, and this chapati was being guarded by a bulldog, and so the mother, you know, pulled the tail of the baby monkey and said, you know, basically, don't go, you'll get chewed up, you know. And the baby monkey repeatedly, like, tries to go, and the mother keeps pulling the baby monkey back, and then finally, when the mother monkey is not looking, you know, the baby monkey takes some steps, you know, forward. And the mother monkey then just like grabs this baby monkey and gives him a nice slap and like really beats him up. And then this baby is just like crying there. And then finally the result of that is the baby monkey just like puts the head on the mother monkey and just like falls asleep. So anyway, bringing to the right path, and I just said right path, I just remembered this baby monkey of how, anyway, everything that a devotee is able to see, that whatever the Lord is doing, it's for the purpose of bringing me to the right path. You know, it may be harsh, I may be beaten up sometimes, but it's really to bring me to the right path. So Bali could see that. So that's the sura and asura mentality. But really, as a conditioned soul, every conditioned soul in this world, you know, we all have this envy, the asuric mentality to some degree or the other in our heart, isn't it? Even we are situated in sattva-guna, you know, we still have some envy. And as long as this envy is there in the heart, you know, it makes us react in certain ways. You know, when some difficulty comes, it's normal, whether it's a saintly person or whether it's an envious person, you know, we do go through some immediate, maybe, emotions, like, you know, like some hurt or discouragement or disappointment or anxiety or, you know, some confusion, bewilderment, and so on. But then after that, how do they process? It's like a whole, you know, different process that both of them go through. One is, you know, patient and tolerant, they're trying to find spiritual solution, they're taking shelter of Krishna. They're really trying to find what Krishna is teaching, but on the other hand, the envy makes one just blame and get angry and vengeful and, you know, find fault and, you know, become a victim and give so many excuses. So anyway, when I first read this verse, you know, the part that really struck me is this word dosha, offense personified. And not just offense personified, but he was maintaining this offense personified. And it really made me think, okay, Dhritarashtra, yeah, whatever, but, you know, I am maintaining offense personified. There's a little Dhritarashtra in my own heart because I've been practicing for so many years and still, you know, where am I? You know, I've not reached very far. So I was thinking just how many times Dhritarashtra was warned but he could not take the good counsel. So we heard, you know, at the time of birth. Then later, you know, when Shakuni comes into the scene and he says, yeah, we can do this gambling match and I'm really expert at throwing dice and all that, nobody can defeat. So then Duryodhan again goes to Dhritarashtra and says, oh, I want to engage in this gambling match, you know, please give me permission. And Dhritarashtra was not feeling sure, so he goes to Vidura and asks, oh, my son wants to engage in this gambling match. So Vidura says that, you know, gambling is really the root cause of all misery, so don't let your son do this. And Dhritarashtra comes back and tells Duryodhan, and Duryodhan, he says that, well, you know, if you're going to take his side, I'm just going to kill myself, you know. And you know, and so Dhritarashtra goes back to Vidura and says, this is what he's saying, you know, he's going to kill himself. And then Vidura says, wonderful, that's very good. It's very good. Because, you know, better to get rid of a person like this, you know. But actually, don't be swayed by his words, because he will actually stay for a long time. So really don't get influenced by his nefarious, you know, ways. So Dhritarashtra goes back to Duryodhan and he again says, you know, I really want to be with you, my son, but, you know, like Vidura is my, you know, good advisor and this is what he's saying. But then Duryodhan was just really so adamant. So then Dhritarashtra, he says, he thinks finally, oh, I am just surrounded by all these, you know, wonderful, wise and learned people all around me. So, you know, whatever fate, you know, will arrange, it'll happen, you know, and I have all these learned people anyway, you cannot stop fate. And Vidura says, you know, don't pass the buck to fate. Fate only, you know, brings the consequences of your previous actions, but it doesn't dictate your, you know, future actions. So, like, make a proper choice. So, and anyway, so many times, you know, before this gambling match, Dhritarashtra was warned, but he just made up his mind. And then when the Pandavas came back, again, you know, they were not treated with properly and they were not given their fair share, and they didn't even give like the five villages. And, you know, again, Vidura speaks to Dhritarashtra like all through night even, but Dhritarashtra could not act on Vidura's wisdom. And then as we read in these verses, Krishna himself comes as a messenger. Still he couldn't, you know, accept. But in the 13th chapter, you know, our first canto, we read how Vidura, that's 35 years after the war, he comes back and he speaks very, very strongly to Dhritarashtra. He says that, you know, you've lost all your family members, your, you know, father, brothers and sons and cousins, they've all died, and you're getting old, you're losing your eyesight, your liver is not functioning, your digestion has become weak, and you know, all these, and you're living like a dog, living, you know, living on the remnants, the scraps of food that you're being given. By whom? By the people that you tried to kill by poison and arson. And still, you're maintaining this attachment, you know, and still you're trying to, you know, feel that you still have some honor in the society. Come on, give it up. You're getting old. You cannot stop time. Get out of here right away. And somehow, this time, he gets it. He gets it. Just overnight, he just leaves the palace. Gandhari also leaves. Sanjaya also leaves. Somehow it works this time. So I was thinking, like, what's the difference? You know, why does he get it this time? So many times, it was the same Vidura that gave him good advice. Bhishma gave him advice. You know, even Akrura gave him advice. So many times he was given advice, but he didn't get it. So what was different this time? Because maybe if I catch that, I could change something about the Dhritarashtra in my own heart. So, because one time also, Dhritarashtra said to Krishna, you know, your words, you know, they just bring so much illumination, you know, when you speak. At that time, everything seems all so clear. But then after that, I lose it. I'm enveloped by darkness. And that's maybe the case with me and the case with many, you know. And it's also the 10th offense that we read every day, that maintaining material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter, and it's also an offense to be inattentive while chanting. So why am I maintaining this offense in my heart? So I want to just ask all of you, what was different this time with Dhritarashtra? What changed? Why did he get it this time? Yes, Prabhu. Yes, Chitari Prabhu.
Well, one thing is his son was already dead, right? Yeah. I mean, there's one possibility. I don't know what else. What do you think of that?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So his biggest attachment was to his son, right? And we always speak of Dhritarashtra as being very, very attached. In fact, his name itself means that. Dhrita means to hold, and Rashtra means kingdom, to hold on to the kingdom. He was just, you know, very attached, and that's like the classic thing we learn from Dhritarashtra. And, you know, we all hold on also to our little kingdoms. We don't have a kingdom like Dhritarashtra, but like we just hold on to something, right? So he did not have as many attachments at this time because, you know, his son Duryodhan died and, you know, he lost all his relatives. So, yeah, that's certainly one point. What else?
So, another point is that Bhima was constantly being inimical to him, you know, because Bhima would serve him, but then Bhima would sometimes get a little angry and say, I kill his sons, his 100 sons, you know, different things for him to hear. I was reading this last night in the Mahabharata. And so that kind of changed his heart. And then, of course, the desire of Vyasadeva and Vidura, you know, their exalted personalities, and they want him to take the Vanaprastha, you know. Mm-hmm. Actually, when he went, Gandhari went with him, Sanjaya, mm-hmm. Vidura went also, but Kunti also went with him, mm-hmm. you know, that's interesting. So you could say, Bhima on one hand was, you know, insulting him, and that kind of woke him up a little. And then, of course, the pure devotees, Vyasadeva and Vidura, wanted him to also change, take the Vanaprastha.
Yeah.
You know, so all of these contribute.
Yeah, so Vidura's association for sure. But I was really thinking also, but he had Vidura's association before too, so many times. But what clicked? Why did it click this time? And why not all the previous times, you know? Any other answers? Mother Agatmika.
Well, it was obvious to himself that he was at the fag end of his life.
Yeah.
And coming from that culture, at least he could know what the destination, you know, question, what's his destination now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly, yeah. He didn't have, you know, there was no more hope in one sense of getting a kingdom, or he was just, yeah, really at the end of his life, so he couldn't hold on much to any, like, material designations or anything anymore. He knew it was coming to an end. And actually, Vidura very kindly reminded him of that. Otherwise, he wasn't very aware, but this time it kind of dawned on him. Yeah, but I was also thinking of how he just experienced so much loss. Like, he just witnessed a lot, so his material hopes just like became shattered, right? Like, I was thinking my own life too, you know, just I've had several major surgeries. I had a massive surgery in 2012, spine surgery, very complicated, and it changed my life after that completely. Quit my work, you know, and so many things. But it actually took a while for me to kind of accept at a deeper level that my life is never going to be the same, or the body is never going to be the same. You know, it's going to be completely different now. So this kind of acceptance of this reality, you know, because we have these hopes, right? Like Bhaktisiddhanta, he says that a spiritual practitioner is said to have made this greatest step in spiritual advancement when he gives up hope for enjoyment in this material world. So when he no longer has any hope for enjoyment in this material world. Because as long as we have some hope that I can find something, you know, then we'll always keep trying in one way or the other. But somehow his hopes became, you know, just shattered. And because his hopes became shattered, also, and with the influence of Vidura, some humility kind of awakened in his heart. Because without humility, the heart just cannot be opened. Until then, he was just feeling this righteousness, right? This righteous kind of anger. And that's really at the root of his maintaining this offense personified in a way. But now he's a bit kind of humbled that, okay, he's trying to live based on the means of those whom he tried to kill. And as you all said, you know, he's older, he's closer to death, so there's more urgency. But there was another fact, two other things I was thinking of, is he didn't have bad association anymore. All those people, you know, he would hear Vidura, he would hear Krishna, something would kind of light up, but like you said, it would get covered up. It would get covered up because he was taking some bad association. But that was gone. But the other thing is just repetition. Right? Sometimes things just have to be heard again and again and again and again, and it chips away little bit, little bit, little bit, little bit, and then finally it tips, you know, the scale tips to the other side. And, you know, repetition is something that's talked of in our Shastra, you know, quite a lot actually. So many things, so many themes are repeated again and again in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Even when Vyasadeva, you know, when he's going through his despondency, Narad Muni tells him that you haven't directly glorified the Lord. And when Vyasadeva says, no, but I did glorify him in this part and this part and this part, and then Narad Muni says, no, you haven't repeatedly done so. So there's something about repetition, right? Meaning of scriptures is revealed by repetition. Or Brahma read the whole, you know, thing three times. It's also said, you know, in the Vedanta Sutra, why our sadhana has to be repeated. There's this aphorism, avritir asakrit upadeshad. That means that, you know, we have to repeat again and again, because the reason is that everyone who's in this material world, you know, we have made some offenses. You know, the holy name is very powerful. Srimad Bhagavatam is very powerful. You know, one holy name purely chanted, it can, you know, dissolve everything and awaken, you know, love of Krishna too. But then offenses, everyone in this world, you know, we've committed some offenses and nobody is really free. And these offenses really block the spiritual power of the practices. And we have offenses coming from previous lives, and therefore there's some inability to experience the results of, you know, devotional service. And so therefore, then this process of sadhana has to be repeated again and again, just like, you know, wood has the capacity to burn, but if it's wet wood, then it has to be dried out first, you know, for a while. And then, you know, it'll actually burn. So, but what I was thinking is, you know, do I have to be beaten by the material energy, or, you know, do I have to repeatedly go through these things? Is that the only way? You know, is there something that I can do about it? So I was, you know, thinking, like, Dhritarashtra became thoughtful after he heard Vidura this time. So something I'm really taking from this section is that the potency of deeply reflecting and introspecting, you know, when something happens in our life, you know, and that, by that, we can learn from our experiences. So many experiences we go through. Every day we go through experiences. The whole creation is only for these two purposes, to give us a chance to enjoy in this world and then to reclaim us. So everything that's happening in our life, you know, Krishna is trying to reclaim us in some way. So if I can try to capture that and deeply reflect, then maybe I don't have to get burnt, you know, so many times repeatedly. And I can also learn not to take offense, just become unoffendable and malleable somehow. There's a book called Unoffendable by Brandt Hansen. It's a very nice book actually, but he also talks about how the root of it is just some kind of feeling of this righteousness, righteous anger, that's at the root of feeling offended in one way or the other. And ultimately then it's the feeling that there's some unfairness, you know, unfairness from Krishna's side. And as long as we feel that Krishna is unfair in some way, however subtle that is, then how can I love him? How can I, you know, go to him actually, you know? So anyway, that's, you know, just some reflections on this verse, that, yeah, the deep reflection on our experiences we all have, but we have to make meaning of those, you know, in our life, and then maybe we don't have to get burned so repeatedly. Any comments, questions, additions, corrections?
I was wondering if you could comment on, you know, it seems like, you know, Krishna set this all up, you know, and, you know, everybody's playing a part. And I wondered, what you would say about that. And just one other thing is, I was just wondering, like, in the word for words, that word, I don't know if you know the Sanskrit that well, but that, the word dosa, how do they get offense personified out of that? Is that, I don't know the language that well. I don't know if you know anything.
Yeah, so the word dosha actually just means fault. It's something
fault.
Like it's something unwanted. That's what dosha means. Dosha. It's something unwanted. So here, what is unwanted is his, you know, his attitude to Krishna, that he's envious of Krishna, that's his fault. That is this unwanted thing, you know, in his heart. So it's offense personified, yeah. Yeah, even in Ayurveda, right, dosha, you know, like dosha is like some fault, basically. Some fault that's not wanted, that's not going to do good to you, that needs to be removed. Yeah, the other aspect of that Krishna is orchestrating this whole thing. So, like, you know, it's not the fault of anybody. They're just playing their parts. Well, Krishna is also orchestrating our life, isn't it? Yeah. So I'm just, you know, I'm just going on in my life, you know, however the modes are pulling me, you know, I'm just getting pulled this way and that way, and we could say that. But, you know, there's a part still we all play, right? You know, Krishna is orchestrating everything, and yet, you know, our free will choice is always there, right? We can't just play victim. And that's, you know, one of the significant differences between how, you know, like somebody like, you know, with a demoniac mentality versus a devotee, how they process, you know, something. Like Maharaj Yudhishthir, you know, even after the whole war, he's just feeling so, like, despondent, right? And he's taking responsibility for it. He's not, you know, that was after Krishna told him, right? You know, the whole Bhagavad Gita happened and all that. And still, you know, he was feeling responsible, not that, okay, you know, you told me, so what's my fault, right? So Krishna's, no matter what arrangement it is, but we still have that minute free will in each situation to choose, you know, make a choice and turn to Krishna. Just as much as, you know, like, you know, the Google lady says, turn left. And, you know, we still have the choice to turn left or right. You know, that, yeah.
I guess sometimes in our own lives, you know, we get a little warning saying, hey, don't go this way. And if we listen, then we'll avoid all the trouble that happened in the
Mahabharata. Yeah. Hare Krishna.
For anybody that would like to learn more about the Mahabharata characters, ISKCON has a course on the online courses called The Fascinating Characters of the Mahabharata, and it tells the story of like 16 or 18 characters from the beginning of their life to the end of their life. So if anybody wants to learn more about Mahabharata, take that course. You'll learn a lot.
Yeah, thank you. Hare Krishna, Mother Matamati.
So, here we have the Drashta, and they're all plotting that he finally listens to Vidura. And I think, if I remember correctly, maybe in the purport, Prabhupada even said something like he went back to Godhead or something, one of the purports. So, if I was Draupadi or any of the other side, I'm like, wow. I mean, after everything he did to devotees, he got away. It's like, how could that be? I mean, Stevie has something. But, you know, certainly, if we just think about what happened, our I guess maybe our different side of us, you know, maybe our, if we were one of those people who were treated that way by this person, we might feel like, you know, how could this happen?
Yeah.
Although, on the other hand, certainly, understanding ourselves as the Drashta, we'd be like, wow, there's great hope for us, you know, in other, even though we may have committed so many offenses or whatever, the Drashta went back to Godhead, I guess there's hope for me. But then if you see the other side, then those thoughts may come. You have any comment on that?
Yeah, those thoughts may come, certainly. And I think this is the wonderful, loving nature of Krishna, that when you turn to him, he just wants us to turn to him, really. Like, even if it's heaps and piles of, you know, whatever, but if we come to the point of deeply regretting and turning to him, Krishna accepts us, as we know Lord Ramachandra's verse and so on. And, you know, regarding how we may feel or how the other queens may have felt, may not have felt, I don't know how they felt, actually. I've not deeply ever studied Mahabharata. But, you know, I certainly can recognize those feelings in my own heart. You know, when somebody does something obnoxious and then, you know, their life just seems to be flourishing in one way or the other, and, you know, they seem to be getting away with it, then it's just like, I want justice. You know, that, like, that voice inside me wants, like, justice. But I think I'm coming to understand more and more that, you know, Krishna is so loving. You know, we can want justice or we can be just won over by Krishna's love. And, you know, it's that envious portion, that Dhritarashtra portion in my own heart, actually, that wants to see that justice being served, you know, rather than having actually this compassionate disposition where I have some understanding that, okay, you know, whatever they did, it was really because of their disconnection from Krishna. And, you know, Krishna accepts them. I don't know if it's that satisfying, if you'd like to add something else. Yeah. But that's simple, but...
A higher look at it too is that these guys were enacting pastimes, Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana. If had Dhritarashtra killed Duryodhana, right, or let us say, then what would have been the outcome of Mahabharata? Mm-hmm. You know, the two of them played a great part in getting all those inimical kings and getting that war that Krishna really wanted. You know, so they played very important role in getting all these kings together to, you know, and get them exterminated.
Yeah.
You have to see that way too.
Yeah, and I was also thinking of just Bali Maharaj's example that I quoted earlier. Like, Bali could have just kind of asked for justice too, but he didn't ask for justice. He could have got justice, but instead he chose love. And, you know, Krishna was, Vamana was completely like, just won by Bali Maharaj's surrender, and he became the doorkeeper, and even, you know, Lakshmi came, and yeah, just this kind of between justice and mercy. One time we had a little seminar between these two things, justice and mercy. You know, it's something that shows up in our life, I guess, a lot. Yeah.
Well, okay. Some more than others.
Some more than others, yes.
Anyways, we're talking, I was joking about Gandhari, but I wonder what role she played. I mean, she's considered practically a Mahajan.
Chase.
I know she's a chase lady, but she was considered like a Mahajan. She wasn't just some village girl. Yeah, I don't think so. So, I mean, basically, that's all Dhritarashtra had left, you know? And I'm sure she was ready to hit the Himalayas, you know? you know, you're going to wonder, you know, what you're going to do, stay there and, you know, be a palace troll? You know?
Thank you.
I don't know, I just...
That's good.
Okay, thank you.
Mother Agathmika, last comment or question.
Actually, I have both a comment and a question. But the comment, your call for reflection made me reflect on the times that I've experienced someone harshly speaking to me, or cutting off or something. I had the good fortune, very shortly after, to recall, my gosh, this is how I have treated Krishna. Exactly. I've done this to Krishna many, many times. And so therefore, when I chant, please engage me in your service, I can't take it lightly and for granted that, oh yeah, I'm dressing like a devotee, I do all the things that are right. Will you accept me, Krishna? Will you accept me back? Like that, you know, in a better, a more humble mood. But then a question is, was it really 35 years that all of his sons were dead and he was still hanging out?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, 35 years in the palace, yeah. Yeah.
And
it's amazing, right? I mean, just living. Yeah, yes. It's sad, amazingly sad. Yeah.
And what is the backstory of Duryodhana's hate for Krishna?
I don't know. I've never studied Mahabharata deeply, so I don't know.
he was Kali personified.
He was Kali personified.
Yeah, yeah. He came to help exterminate all these warriors. Which version of Mahabharata said? Well, whatever version. And Dhritarashtra was a Gandhara king called Dhritarashtra.
Thank you all very much, Mantra Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.